Welcome to Goa. This is a podcast about the people, places, and everyday stories of India's smallest state. As creators of Goa.me, Goa's largest online community, we set out to bring you interviews and candid conversations with interesting and inspiring individuals. So come along and get to know Goa beyond the holiday. In this episode, we sit down with Rataraj Parekh and Mansi Hatangari, founders of Matter, an architecture, design, and publishing studio housed in a quiet corner of Sangolda. With past projects ranging from such private and public spaces in Goa as the Kokum House, a stunning five-bedroom home in the village of Aldona, which was one of the six residential locations used in the 2019 Goa Photo Walk this past December, and the Tinkering Campus, a learning-by-making space led by industrial designer Avik Sarkar in Nechinola. Now, in addition to Matter's ongoing architecture practice, digital and print publications, they are also the chief curators of Frame, an independent biennial conclave and three-day event centered around the pedagogy and practice of contemporary architecture in India. A humble yet incredibly accomplished duo who we were very excited to meet, and of course, curious to ask how, of all places, Goa became their home.
Moved to Goa in 2014. We had this sense of two sort of core verticals, let's say, of practice. You know, one, we are both architects and we both have an editorial background. For many years, we were editors at Indian Architect in Gurgaon, a very old magazine, professional architecture magazine. And we spent about 4.5 years in Bombay. Then we had a bit of a stint in Ahmedabad, which didn't work out. And then we moved to Goa. So when we moved to Goa, these two sort of universes came together. You know, I was personally interested in an architecture practice, so we wanted to set up a studio. We had one project at that time, and we thought we will do it slowly. We didn't have much ambition of a large practice or anything like that. And on the other end, we always were invested in conversations on architectures, discourse in general. So there's two worlds, one from, I think I'm personally, between the two of us, I'm more inclined and interested towards practice of architecture, design of buildings, etc. And then Mansi always was more inclined and invested in conversations, discourse, publishing, editorial stuff. So that's how Matter formed, you know, in that sense. We thought of a word that connects physical content and sort of intellectual content. And that's how the firm was named.
I think it's generally that we were looking at a very open source. We didn't have ambition, like he said, to develop into a very sort of specific kind of a platform. So we started with a WordPress blog, which we still retain, and that's our primary publishing platform, Think Matter. And content as an idea started in Matter with that blog. So we had one architecture project and that blog. Meanwhile, of course, like you said, we had this whole background with the magazine. We had co-curated three conferences together, which were to do with architecture. So we always knew that it will develop along the lines into something like that. Mm-hmm. But to start, we started small and...
It's a homegrown idea. And we did not really seek work or anticipate a very formed structure. So we kind of discovered how we want to operate as we went. So in fact, now we are seriously making our own portfolio website. You know, till now we have not really taken a stab at, because it was all very hazy, you know, where, and we kept getting editorial projects as well as we kept receiving inquiries for design projects. And we were initially not very choosy. Now we are a bit. So we accepted whatever came, you know, slowly, and then we, you know, the thing that really connects these two domains, let's say, is the fact that we always wanted to be actively involved in discourse in some form, you know, conversation on architecture, especially in India, because we realize that we come from this, you know, incredible landscape, and it invariably influences how we think and what we do, and our problems are large. Yes, and another thing that I have to mention is that a lot of times people ask why Goa. It wasn't very planned, like I said, you know, but I joined the Charles Koria Foundation. So if the foundation would have been in Bombay, we would have actually ended up in Bombay. Because it was here, and because, you know, at that time, my personal incentive, so I have been very sort of closely studying Charles Koria's work since my days in school. So for me, it was a no-brainer, you know, we just sort of packed and moved. And it was just a set of good coincidences that we ended up here, and the foundation was here, and once we came here, you know how it is.
Yeah, it's easy to be like, so, okay, I can make it.
Yeah, I can exactly. Yeah, I think Goa has been very good to us.
Yeah, and it sounds like, I mean, Goa is the environment that lets you have that exploration, right?
Yes.
And it sounds like you guys came for more of a, we have these two domains we like to explore, but let's experiment within them and then define what we do around it, rather than saying, we are this, now we do projects.
That's precise. And then we are still not very clear.
Yeah.
So we have kept it a little open in it.
Yeah,
so we're
still
see,
on,
you know,
our way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Goa was a very welcome culture shock for us. From the base, the fast things that, you know, we can dabble with, like multiple things at the same time. And that has been very, very good to us.
Yeah.
Because, you know, efficiency is not the key driver. It's about that how an idea forms and then it concretizes in some way. And if it fails, it's okay. Because
yeah.
then we are looking at something else. And that affordability is something that Goa gives us.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
true, yeah. In fact, there's a contrast to where we were before, you know, both large cities and all. It was impossible to pause.
Yeah.
And the kind of work we intend to do, we need that pause. You know, we can't really, otherwise you'd be burnt out. So in that context also this works, right? I mean, you know better than us. Also, it is important to understand that a lot of our work is self-initiated.
Mm. Right.
So we seek some sort of patronage or funding after the project is sort of formed,
okay.
especially in content or in curation. So we don't generally have, even as an architecture practice, a lot of our work is pro bono, research oriented, and there are issues that we want to really engage with, you know, especially public buildings, you know, public projects. So that somehow is also forming a core of the work we do.
Yeah.
And that requires a place like Goa, because, you know, you are not always thinking of a direct fee against. These projects require our time beyond, you know, like they're demanding. And also it requires a very different kind of thinking. So we have been involved with two key areas. One is early childhood education or infrastructure for through Anganwadis and design of Anganwadis. And the second is with Goa Waste Management Corporation with material recovery facilities and sorting centers and all.
It's been like 3-4 years and the projects kind of takes a long time.
Yeah, it demands a lot of patience and it's a very different. I mean, for me, that was the kind of continuity from the Charles Collier work at the Charles Collier Foundation. Because at the foundation, that is all we did.
Yeah, it's all kind of socially driven
correct.
Projects. I always found, and from the little I knew of your studio before meeting you guys, I found it really interesting because my first introduction was at the Pecha Kucha event, I think 2 years ago.
I think so.
It must have been.
1.5 years ago.
And that was an event all around design and architecture.
That's
true. And you spoke, but it was so much more about, I guess, the concept of architecture rather than specific project you had worked on. And then fast forward to this past December, I was attending the Goa Photo Walk and came across the Kokum House, which is this phenomenally, like this beautifully designed house in Aldona. And then I started to put the pieces together and realized this was all coming from the same studio.
Mm-hmm.
And then came the Writer's Workshop, which I had heard about, which was also organized by you guys. So you do have your hands in a lot of different pots, and it's really interesting to see how you bring so much more to the table because you're doing each of them.
Yeah, so it kind of nourishes us back. There is a limit to which I feel we can draw from what we know. Sort of we build knowledge as you go. What I would like to call is a bit reflective as a practice. We are looking back as well of what has been the product of, you know, what has been the consequence, let's say, of your work every time. And that has also helped us. So we are not limited by a particular style or an idea or we are not like fascinated by something that's in or trendy at the moment.
Right.
We are kind of constantly looking for a way that's original to us to do things. So therefore, you know, a lot of our buildings like the Kokum House or even Tinkering, you can't see those buildings and say tell that it's there. These
right,
are our
it's
projects.
Not a cookie cutter.
Yeah. You can't
like
yeah,
some
yeah.
development projects here where they just it's the same thing in different places. You're like, wow.
That's true. So that's something that we are trying to resist. I mean, we are resisting. So in some way, we feel that if somebody can see a project and trace it back to us, then there is a bit of a problem, you know, in that sort of production of work in that way. And in that way also, I think both our content work and our work as a studio, these projects are fairly unique. And the good thing about, or maybe the bad thing, we don't know yet, is that we do not have like two offices. Everybody works on everything.
So okay. Mostly everyone is an architect. And everyone works on everything. So they are writing also, and at the same time they are working on projects also. Some of them are leading them. Mostly it is Ruturaj who is guiding the architecture projects. He's also part of the content as well. But initially when we started Matter, we started with the idea that, you know, there will be two verticals, saying that there is making and there is thinking.
Okay.
But along, I think, 2 years down the line, we realized it doesn't work that way. And what we are looking at is like a cyclic feedback loop. And so now we are starting to think of it as more like content in architecture and architecture in content. It sort of always links back to that idea that, you know.
And that also makes it worth everybody's while, I guess. Because again, you know, like we have to think that, you know, why are we here? And as a bargain against, let's say, being in an urban center, trying to make that big office work, you know. I feel the advantage that we have, all of us being here, is that we can also be liberal in our view of what does it mean to work in an office, you know. So what happens is that these other things that we do, conferences, publications, etc., they also nourish and nurture people who work with us. And it cuts both ways, you know. So we do feel that people who join Matter, they take a longer time to train and get on board. But that is fine, you know, because then they also stay much longer.
Yeah, it's a good investment.
And it's something that, again, feeds back into itself. And like I said, I would like to think of us as a practice which reflects on or takes pauses often. So that we are not compelled all the time to deliver on things. Mm-hmm. Which is to a frustration of a lot of our clients.
But it's a nice working mentality to have. I definitely relate.
Yeah, because I the buildings really, their process is very slow.
Right. So it's nice to have.
So it takes years really, to get a project. Kokam House, they're still working on it.
It's always ongoing.
That mentioned too, when you think of a proper, you know, productive office and all this stuff, and then you're sitting in this space, which is lovely, by the way. How did you choose this house in the village, and how did you end up here? And
so, like everything else,
organically.
It looks like we have a plan, you know?
Usually the best plans are when you just have the full door open and whatever falls on your lap first, you're like, great, let's go with that. And then when it doesn't fall, you don't think it's a failure because it was like, well, that wasn't part of the plan, so we'll go with it.
That's pretty much like. Also, what happens is that we created a Matter to be mostly digital to start with.
Okay.
So we did not have like the print stuff that we do, the journal, the publications and all, were actually followed. They weren't the things that we were doing, and then the digital thing happened.
Okay, it was always digital.
So we were always online first. And incidentally, a lot of our clients, not a lot, almost all our clients, are not permanent residents in Goa.
Okay.
So our projects were made in correspondence, so it didn't really matter. So we had to be closer to the site more than where the business is, you know, where the clients are. So in that sense, it didn't matter, you know, for them. Because almost everything really, which also trained us the other way around, you know, now we are able to do projects outside of Goa.
Mm.
Because we are kind of set up to not really meet so much in person or do a lot in correspondence.
Okay.
With that sort of discipline.
And so I'm interested to ask, you said you started digital and then moved into print publication, and usually it's the other way around. A lot of businesses started out in print publication, but as that has teetered off, they've moved into digital. So what inspired you to do that, even though everyone is moving towards digital?
I think one of the reasons was very fairly simple, because we didn't have the resources to pull off a production value of that sort. We always knew that if we were printing something, it has to be of
very high quality.
Some quality. And somewhere at that time, we didn't have the resources. And over time, because of our background with IAB, we also wanted to move away from this idea of this very mainstream ad content. So we were always trying to figure out a way to negotiate it. At the same time, we also have this position of not being too academic. We want to be a professional magazine or a professional publication on practice in India. Mm-hmm. We don't want to go into something which is more academies in that sense.
Yeah.
So over time, we were trying to figure out always to find a patron or find a client who would align to our values.
Right.
That, you know, there's minimal intervention in the editorial process. And
it's not cluttered with ads and yeah. stuff like that.
Yeah.
Basics, I mean, not very complicated stuff, but also I think we were saturated by the time we moved by that business model, you know, which was extremely aggressive, and it kind of, we saw what it does to people.
Mm.
And there's no point of really chasing that because it doesn't lead anywhere. You know, people were 20 years senior to us. And now we all know, because, you know, suddenly in the last 3 months, we know how quickly and how abruptly things have changed, right?
Yeah.
And what has happened to the things, everything that we really took for granted.
And like logistics and everything's come to a halt.
Yeah.
And that was the thing in Bombay, or in, because it was so, the cycle was set to the tune of a month.
Yeah.
So you're always, by the time you finish this, you're chasing the next.
Yeah.
And you really can't pause, because the pausing, you know, you have to build, you have to collect.
And
you
the
have
quality
to
deteriorates over time, because you're just chasing that deadline.
Yeah.
And you're not really concentrating or focusing on the content. And
this, the other side also is like equally precarious, because in Goa sometimes you drift off, you know.
Yeah.
You don't know.
It's like a
you can wake up with a real ambition, and that day your printer says sorry. And in
electricity, having backups of Wi-Fi.
We really have safety nets on safety nets, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we cannot have a failed Wi-Fi, so we have a spare.
Exactly. You get
and then and there are still days when both of them won't work. Yeah. So it's the challenge here is that we have to create our own intensity.
Yeah.
So there are months when I'm slow and I'm kind of not in the mood to chase something, and then there are months, you know, leading to something like Frame, which is like a bit of a frenzy.
Yeah.
So we balance that. We are lucky. But in some form, I think our background with both the foundation, my personally, but both of us with the magazine and all, has also made us agile.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't get, so hopefully, you know, we don't get stuck. It has also afforded, after we moved here, Mansi took some time off, did her master's.
Yeah, I did my master's the last 2 years. So I think it also allows us that kind of a thing. And we also don't have the ambition of growing the studio to a very large scale.
Right.
In a way that it becomes an administrative nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, it already exhausts us.
You know, I think naturally it will happen if it has to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sometimes we have more work, or maybe, and then it's a bit elastic. So then suddenly people join, and now things are difficult. For everyone, it's not just us. So we shrink, you know. But also, we really in Goa, you know, you don't have overheads. I think, I mean, the projects that we have not accepted, we would not have been in the position to say no to if we are not here. Because, you know, sometimes you get work and then you don't want to do it, you know, because it's a drag. But you think of the project as a cash cow of some sort for the office. So we don't have that. We don't have work that we have just taken on because of the money.
And also, I think because of the curatorial publications, events, it sort of balances out. So sometimes when the architecture part is slow, the content is the sort of what we are banking on, or vice versa.
And that brings a lot of leads in, right?
It also brings in that relief that, you know, that we are not depending on one client, one project.
Yeah.
And we also somehow have managed to stagger our initiatives in a way. We are still doing it. Make it in a cyclic process that, you know, this frenzy also is per event.
So,
it doesn't all boil down.
It's a curve, you know.
Yeah.
So there are months which are really high intensity, high energy. And generally monsoons are slow.
Yeah. For everyone.
For
good reason. And so we've touched on things on and off a bunch, but to break down the actual project scope that you guys have, because you work on architecture projects for specific clients, both residential or commercial.
Yeah.
Then you have your publications, which span from your own journal of sorts to, you mentioned the last time we spoke that you're working on an architectural guide to Goa.
Yes.
Then there's this writer's workshop that you're a part of, which is going to be a book of stories from Goa.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, there's the conferences and events, such as Framed, which is a biannual And then you're also involved with one-off events that come up under different collectives or groups, correct?
Only one or two. I think we get involved with, as an extension with Charles Correa Foundation and their work because of our past association, and then with COCOM, with Dean and Avik and the Social Design Festival.
Yeah.
So certain projects are, like I said, are self-initiated. In some way, the process that we follow is more, actually, that's an important bit. You know, a lot of times people look at the outcomes of our studio. Nonetheless, the process is fairly hidden. So you suddenly see the product in terms of the journal or a conference. Nonetheless, there are threads that connect back to a lot of years of thinking. So at some form, the conference and its theme and the title and all connects back to when we started thinking of this particular time period of, you know, as a research project that we wanted to do as a studio. And we saw that there is generally disregard for that particular, you know, post-independence period of building. And that over years led to this particular event.
Okay.
So I think somewhere you get invested in an idea, and the Goa book also is going on since quite some time.
3 years
and
now.
Okay.
Yeah, and that also is somewhere a pro bono initiative.
Yes.
It's by a Spanish publisher. She's based out of Chandigarh, and she's done 10 other city guides. And when she approached us, it largely interested us because of the documentation process. We realized over time that Goa doesn't have a compilation of that sort. But now it's taken us more than 4 years because there is very little data available. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the kind of documentation that we are trying to do requires that kind of investment from us. That it requires us to draw certain schemes out. It requires us to explain that, you know, these are the kind of churches or the new buildings and the old buildings. And it's sort of developing, has been developing into something much more. This year is the year we close. We have arrived at more than 450 odd buildings. Now we are trying to distill the whole compilation to just 140 that we can put in the book.
Yeah.
But that somewhere also is something that will feed into some other project for us. And somewhere then, you know, all these projects, we start to see the connections, whether the writer's workshop that you mentioned is for the People Place project. It's initiated by someone in Bombay. She's called Nishanaya Gupta. And we are starting to interact with, you know, then people, and then there are places, and now we have buildings, and we sort of are getting more familiar with
that. So these are also our windows to Goa, right?
Yeah.
And we are also outsiders, and you are also outsiders. You know how that is, right?
Yeah,
and,
you know, that's
our fascination.
And we don't want to really see this place as something we can kind of exploit.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you sort of give back? So, in some form, these books and these initiatives which are Goa-oriented, they give us a chance to... And that's why also even the festivals and all we do, we always feel that, you know, smaller things, like we don't want to put our guests up in a Taj.
Yeah.
Because where does the money go? You know, I mean, we don't know. I would rather... So, we kind of look at smaller businesses around, wherein even they might not be as efficient or as... clean and
or as
service.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it has somehow, it kind of what we bring to the place stays within in some form.
Yeah.
And that's true with the buildings also. So we don't have a spec sheets sort of approach. We are kind of looking closely at this process of how to make something. Very often we refrain from using something that's just off the shelf. Our buildings would not come across as a collection of products.
Right.
You know, they are more very sort of very specific to something being made, put in place in on site.
Right. The whole thing
And it's not this idea of craft or anything. You know, that's not something that I am so invested in. But I'm just sort of, we are both, you know, invested in that sense, and everybody in the studio in some form is interested in this idea of making. So how is a book made?
Like, you know how.
And who are the people who make books? You know, and then you start a certain conversation both ways. And these people who are beyond this studio, they have an incredible impact on. And they are not people who are, like I said, they're not like boutique craftsmen of sorts, you know. Welders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, welding is such a accessible, fabrication is such an accessible urban skill we have in India. So there is a lot to, you know, there is a lot of feedback that we get from fabricators. And then slowly the detail evolves. So we are not trying to going in saying that, okay, let's bring this big company in who have this kind of figured this all out. And that's also a little bit, the works again, cuts both ways. So buildings leak and things don't work and doors don't open properly.
Or they swell.
Exactly.
Then you replace them, but then they swell down again. So
then we rely on that knowledge more than... And in India, that's the advantage of, I don't know, I mean, from whatever I have observed of contemporary architecture abroad, especially the whole Eurocentric discussion on design, right? I mean, everything is produced in Scandinavia, so to say. We are in a very different context, you know. Like, one is, of course, our climate is forgiving.
Yeah.
So we can keep buildings more open and more breezy, etc. But also, in some form, in India, you can just sort of take a bike and go to a carpenter and get something made, you know.
Yeah, no, that's the thing that amazes me here, is literally that you don't need these big box stores to buy everything. Here, you can go to the grocery store, everything is labeled from down the road, produced here, or if you need something made at home, you can find someone who will make it for you. That's just not a concept. Also, there's a manpower for everything.
Yeah.
That's something that doesn't exist
in,
you know, my country or similar countries. Where you can say, okay, I need this. There's literally a person who will do it, and there's the material, and it can happen.
And it happens at an efficiency and cost which is lower than something that you can just get off the shelf. Like this table, with all its imperfections, you won't find it anywhere. You know, it's like it's something that a carpenter has come, he has perfectly measured, completely at level, rests on it. And this is a guy in Moira.
Yeah,
this is just behind the church. There's a village. Where these are people who have a legacy of carpentry in the family. And if you want to find one, you have to go to Mapsa market on Fridays. And this is something that, this is not even a seasoned wood, you know. He has picked up something that's very cheap and available of, you know, this is like jungle tree wood.
Mm.
So it breathes, you know, it kind of expands. Right now it's expanding.
Mm.
And then it will again, you know, come winter, it will again perfectly flush.
Yeah.
I mean, one is that these things that we design or build are not, they have a certain process. And I think my personal, if I have to put money on something on my practice, it is the process. It's not the what we could produce at the end of the process.
Not the outcome also.
To a lot of people who look at the outcomes of this work, they think that, oh, there are this random threads, you know. Suddenly a workshop, suddenly a conference, maybe a building here. But in the studio, these are like long threads that we are chasing.
Yeah.
And we are also looking at ways in which we can have a conversation of impact.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say for the conference is sort of an incidental outcome of that conversation, but it's not that we set out to do a conference and now let us come and discuss, you know, the commercial. That's not how it works, for us at least. And that's the same with a design project. It takes time for us to turn something around. It works for some clients and they say we have the time. And for many it doesn't work also. So a lot of times we also have this sort of mismatched expectations, let's say.
But it's nice to be able to let those go, like you said. There's not this deep pressure to say yes.
And we have chased them. I mean, it's not that we have ego involved in it. We have chased that kind of work because we need the money and all that. But a lot of times we do feel that at the end of the entire effort, it does not really add up to anything which endures. It does not last somehow. It just... At the end of it, you just feel all for nothing. So then now my way of thinking was different, and I think Mansi thinks much more intuitively. I don't.
You're
I fall for logic and reason more often, but now I trust instinct a little more in everything. You know, it feels like it's right, kind of an idea.
Yeah.
It's coming difficult. It comes difficult to me.
But that's something that I think Goa has allowed to happen. Because you have that time to sort of figure out that, you know, this could be what is working and this is not. And we have had the time to analyze that. We are in a better place.
Yeah.
I think that we are now a four-year-old practice. Five this year. Yeah. And that way, when we look back, we think, okay, you know, it is only because we are here that we could have had done so much.
You really have done so much as someone who's peering into your practice.
But more than that, I think it's just the luxury of choosing that, you know, we had the choice and is something.
But you know, even if you don't know, this place affords you to drift a bit.
And it's forgiving enough, you know. It's not that it's held up against you that you tried this and it didn't work. You can always move
easy
on
failures.
Yeah.
So it works both. So we, I mean, I used to travel a lot and we have clients outside Goa, so it compels us to, you know, visit, let's say, Bombay, Bangalore, places like that, a couple of times a month before the lockdown.
Yeah.
But we need that, you know. It's, this place can be a little isolating also. And if you do not actively, I mean, if you are not actively seeking to engage with people other than, then you can slowly become completely sort of self-absorbed.
Yeah.
And lose track somehow of, and which happens to a lot of people, you know. And then a couple of years later, you'll meet them and they talk about things that make no sense. No?
Or one needs to keep a certain awareness of what's going on. Same with Goa is very comfortable.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of areas that aren't as comfortable. And you can forget that in Goa as well. That's something.
So, and a little discomfort is necessary.
Struggle,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Struggle, I guess. A discomfort of the struggle is very essential to shape in some form what you want to really engage with.
In fact, we were talking about this just last week we were discussing, because somehow I don't think we have acknowledged it for ourselves that matter has done so much or it has the potential to do this much. Because whoever we are speaking to are much more reputable and much more senior.
Yeah.
You never think of it, and that for us has been a very lucky break.
Also, we have to draw lines very carefully, because a lot of times when you are dealing with these two ends of work, you know, when you're producing architecture and also sort of publishing it.
Yeah.
This clarity we have always had that we should never in any form use our platforms to promote ourselves.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And it happens to everything. Even for the Goa architecture book, we had this huge discussion whether tinkering goes in it or it doesn't. And you know, it happens all the time. But luckily, even in Goa, we are, say, meeting people like Dean or someone. They have years and years of experience behind.
But it gives us access. That's the thing. So the publication bit gives us a lot of access to other people and their thoughts.
Yeah.
And in some way, it becomes like a research in practice, you know. It feeds back into what we do. And it also helps us make more aware and self-critical. Let's say, would we put any of our buildings in the publications that we curate? That's the question, right? I mean, then, and then that can also be very crippling, I have found. Because you kind of want to always be, you know, hold yourself to that standard. And that standard doesn't come on the first project you do, you know. The initial things are always crap.
Yeah.
So slowly you build to that point. But the problem is that when you start on the other end, when you're already curating and judging in some form people, other people's work, you tend to do a disservice to your practice and you don't allow that time for it to mature. And you think that the first thing you'll do
But then it's a different art form, right? To be good in curation requires a different set of skills, right? Not every single person who can build the most incredible structure or design or whatever it is can then go and curate other. So it's good to be exercising both.
Yeah,
but I can relate to that.
It puts you in a very tough spot both ways.
Yeah.
I mean, I have also realized that, you know, you cannot hold your own work. It's like being an artist and curating a, let's say, a gallery.
Yeah.
So everything that you produce, you think whether will I display. That's the whole problem, you know. But it you make peace with it, because then it's inevitable. Your initial projects are going to be bad. And then you learn. And if somebody claims that you have straight away jumped to that master,
that's not true.
It's
only it became public when it was that kind Yeah, I can relate to that. There's one other project I would like to ask you guys about, and that's the waste van. The waste wagon. There we go.
Well, see, like I said, we have been involved off and on with the Goa Waste Management Corporation.
Yeah.
We are trying to help them set up these material recovery facilities. And there was a time when Sanjeet Rodericks, who is now the commissioner of City of Panjim, was director of the Goa Waste Management Corporation. He's a very agile bureaucrat. We have over years developed a sort of relationship working with him. So he pulled us in. He must have visited some of these facilities, and he kind of was a little upset or shocked at the condition in which people work as waste segregators.
Yeah.
Right? We have no culture of segregation, so everything goes into one bin. So it's like people physically pick your shit up and kind of put it apart. You know? So he was very keen that when we make these facilities, we should do it in a way that has some dignity. And also, they have to be well-designed facilities, because either ways, they end up costing the same. So we started resurveying a lot of these different villages where these facilities were supposed to be set up. And then we figured out that it's what we need is more prototype kind of thinking. So it's not like really one project that we do as a specific, this very, you know, sort of piece of jewelry sort of an idea, but it's more like a systems thinking issue. So in that process, what happened was that all these buses that the Kadamba Transport Corporation uses, you know, being public buses, they are subject to abuse like nothing else, you know.
I'm amazed so, at them so run. You're sitting in
them. And they carry way beyond their capacity all the time. But they are, so what happens is they don't really junk them, they retire them.
Right.
After a point, after they realize that there is a limit to how much we can also keep repairing or upkeep this infrastructure. And then new buses come in. So all these buses, they go in a morgue. In Porvorim, there's this huge plateau where they're all parked, a couple of thousands of them.
Yeah.
And they generally keep repairing them and they auction them for scrap.
Okay.
So it seldom happens. But what happens is once you strip the bus down, the engine and the sachet is as good as new. You know, you just have to service it. It has already run a couple of lakh of kilometers. And you, if you retain, if you kind of recover in some way the sachet, you can do whatever you want with the body. It can have a second life of sorts. So this is something that he found.
Okay, I was going to ask, how did that start?
We didn't know. We didn't know.
Yeah.
He, because he is a bureaucrat, he understood how the transport department works. And because they were interested in waste, they said, why don't we upcycle a bus? So we were looking at a bin, actually, to design a dustbin, which can segregate waste on site in a lot of these events that happen in Goa.
Yeah.
The problem with these events, especially things like sunburn and all, is because they occupy, they are pop-up events,
yeah,
right? They occupy venues that are not designed for that particular event to happen. Mm. A beach sign or a street sign or whatever. They also have these international film festivals and stuff. So we tried, but then his idea was that what if you take one of these buses and redesign it as a bin, as a dustbin, as a mobile bin. Then all we have to do, and this also helps because it's not just this, you know, schools have annual days where there's just tons of trash being produced, sports events, and villages which are remote in Goa, they do not necessarily have a permanent segregating facility.
Right.
So then we went and saw the morgue and we were surprised. take any bus you want, sort of an idea. And in fact, there was more effort for us to get the bus re-registered.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get a new number plate for them, especially, than to actually get it from the government. They said, don't take, you know.
Yeah.
They are just happy that space has. So when we took it to the workshop, and there's a workshop in Varna, and this fellow makes bodies for all Kadamba buses.
Okay.
So we had never done that automobile design, so we didn't know even which side the sachets, which side to cut, you know, because there's a fuel tank on the other side, and it's very tricky, and the idea is those bins open it so that you can put the trash in and then close back in. And we had to also figure out a way to open it from the back, put a ramp down so that the trolleys can go in and out. But this one fabricator, he didn't blink at all when we made a presentation. He said, yeah, just send me the bus, I'll get it done. So then we made drawings like architects do, and we produced shop drawings in collaboration with them. And they budgeted one. They said, let's make one bus. So that is another thing of working in public projects, you know, that you have to create a demonstration project and everybody has to applaud a bit and be happy with it. And then they say, okay, now let's put 20. They cannot invest as government public money, dealing with public money in something that may or may not work. So this became a proof of concept. Then more and more ambition. In fact, we have a television set inside with like a DVD player. So when you park it somewhere, it kind of shows you this is the how to segregate, what are the bins, and it gives you like, you know, these public messages. It's a public message board. And then there is this another little counter inside from which they sell compost, because they were producing compost at the plant. So slowly, more things, they wanted the bus to do all of it.
But so tell, What is the status of this project?
It's done. Including registration. So the government figured out a way to re-register these buses,
okay. Bring
them back into circulation. So once you register, you get like a 15-year window to run the thing. So now, unfortunately, the bus came within the lockdown. It got re-registered in the lockdown period.
Okay.
So nothing has really happened, like a festival or something.
Right.
So they're waiting for it to try, and they are going to call us as soon as they do.
Yeah.
So we can go and see how people are reacting to it. We also decided the color graphic scheme.
Yeah.
Which is now used as a graphic scheme for all their vehicles. So they're slowly changing because it's a nice scheme.
Fun. It's very, it's like blue and kind of modern.
They're the colors of Goa, you know, basically the blue, the light green and what you see all around.
Yeah.
The whole point was that it should not, again, this is not our point. What Sanjeet wanted is that there is a certain perception associated to these vehicles which are deal with waste.
Yeah.
That they are dirty. You know, in some form, they are sort of this.
Yeah.
And they're built like that. And there's no fault of this. And they go through this, you know, like they pick up the trash all their life. They smell in a certain way.
Yeah.
So he wanted something that kind of also changes that person.
Like, it's vibrant.
And it's a little quirky.
It's a little quirky. Like a little.
So
it'll go very well on sunburn. These festivals.
Yeah. Let's see. We are in fact. It's so unfortunate. We really pushed for them to do it in the last film festival.
The season. Yeah.
Last IFFI, even Serendipity.
Yeah.
They wanted to park it in Panjim. They said you cannot take it out of the workshop if you don't have the number plate. So we even thought that we'll pay the fine, you know, worst case scenario. They said that's not the case. If there's an accident, you can't claim insurance and all on it.
Yeah.
So then we had to, otherwise we had to
take it for
some traffic fine. We'll take it.
That's so cool.
But the whole fun is someday we'll experience it.
Hopefully
the festivals might happen soon.
Yeah, let's see. In some form or another. No, that's another thing is we'll have to get a lot of visuals from you guys because the bulk of the work you do is much more visual than it is.
You can take that picture thing, you know, it covers everything.
Yeah,
true. Which one were you in? I'm really curious.
This
was two I have presented in.
This was at this place in Anjuna.
Anjuna, that's the first one.
Yeah.
The script was a bit funny.
It was more of like banter chat you were giving. It wasn't, but I liked that about it.
The other one, so the same presentation as a second, like a more serious version of it.
Okay. No, I like that one. It was quirky.
Yeah, even I like that one because we don't take it so seriously.
Yeah, that came across. I wanted to be an architect my entire childhood. So I remember when I was 10 or 11, I saved up all my allowances and I bought myself like a house making program, like the proper one, not Sims or like any of these store ones.
Oh, like a proper,
you're gonna build your house, here's the software to like make the plans.
See, that's the other thing, if you were in India, you would have just taken a pirated copy.
But if you ask most architects now, they don't want to be architects. So it's like, but actually, it's a nice, I feel that, you know, our education sort of opened us out to design of all kinds and just that visual culture.
I think that liberal arts sort of horizontal, no, which runs in, that's really, that sets you up for a very different life.
Yeah.
And I think if I would not have done a design curriculum, I would have been a very different person in general.
I think
it's
in art, music, culture.
But in general, like taking life in a very different way.
Yeah. Or just the pursuit of process.
That's
the joy in that thing, you know, and so like what you're doing right now must give you joy in some way. Or in some form, you know, you may not have a very wealthy life, but you have a rich life.
Yeah. And that's a wrap for today. As mentioned, Matter's work is incredibly visual and truly needs to be seen to be experienced. So we've compiled photos of many of our favorite projects and those we've discussed here in a corresponding post on Goa.me. We also highly suggest you check out their newly refurbished website and studio portfolio to get a full scope of their work at studiomatter.in. We should also mention that the beautifully designed Kokum House, built in collaboration with Zoa Architects, is also available for holiday rentals via Airbnb, Vista Rooms, and Booking.com, the links to which we'll share in our show notes along with everything else we covered in this episode.
Also, a small administrative heads up, as we will be shifting Goa from a weekly to a bi-monthly podcast, with new episodes released on the 1st and 15th of every month. So be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and don't be shy to leave us a review if you're enjoying the show so far. To learn more about what we do beyond the podcast, make sure you check out our website, goa.me, and follow us on Instagram, @goa. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon.